Krishna Chayan Prabhu Doya Karo Mohanai Tomami Nate Kaya Lao Shakit Samsarai Shri Krishna Chayan Charya, also Teda such as she mod his divine grace. Abaya Chananada Bhakta Banana Go Sami Shila Prabhupada Kijai. ISKCON founder Acharya Shila Prabhupada Kijai. Ananda Koti Vaishnav Vrinda Kijai. Namacharya Shila Huridas Thakur Kijai. Prem Sekho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha. Siva Sati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijai. Ashishi Radha Krishna Gopagopanath Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturnam Kijai Jagannathasami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Srimati Galasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. Oh, glorious the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Chinamani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So, Om Ganata Madanda Shaganjana Shilakaya Chakshur Un Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. And actually, I should read the translation. My dear Lord, please be merciful to me, because who can be more merciful than your Lordship within these three worlds? Your incarnation is just to reclaim the conditioned fallen souls, but I assure you that you will not find a more fallen soul than me. Therefore, my claim is first. My dear Lord Nityananda, you are always joyful in spiritual bliss. Since you appear very happy, I have come to you because I am most unhappy. If you kindly put your glance over me, I may also become happy. My dear Advaita Prabhu, husband of Sita, you are so kind. Please be kind to me. If you are kind to me, naturally Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda will also be kind to me. I pray for the mercy of Swarup Damodar, the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Bhatta Raghunath Goswami, Shri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Shri Jiva Goswami, and Shri Raghunath Das Goswami, and Lokanath Prabhu. I, Narottamadas, pray for the merciful Srinivasacharya, and I always desire the company of Ramachandra. Ramachandra, of course, is his friend. He's not specifically referring to Lord Ramachandra. So, before we go on to the Krishna book, I want to mention that today, at least here in North Carolina, is Bahu Lastami. Now, I gave a whole talk about that yesterday during the Sunday program here in Nugaloka. That was also on Zoom and Facebook and YouTube. But I'm just going to speak very briefly. Now, many people think that Bahu Lastami is the commemoration of the appearance of Radhakund. And I have news for you. It's not. And let me explain why I say it is not the appearance of Radhakund. Balastami occurs during the month of Kartik. Radhakund, according, and I'm not going to read the quotes, yesterday I read many of the quotes from Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and also, you know, Bhagavatam's references. Radhakund appeared in the month of Chaitra, which is like April-May period. And the reason I'm saying that is that Radhakund appeared right after Arishtashura was killed. And Arishtashura was killed at that particular time. So, according to the Acharyas. And there is absolutely no Shastric reference to Radhakund appearing on Bahu Lastami. There is a special shastric reference to observing Bhavastami by bathing in Radha Kund. That's true. And Radha Kund is situated in the forest called Bahulavan. And Bahulavan is named after this nice cow named Bahula. Everybody knows that. And the story of this nice cow named Bahula, she's a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And basically, she just had a calf. And this is many, many years ago. Obviously, many, many years ago. So, she had just had a calf. And after she had her calf, she was grazing, and her Brahmin owner sent her out to graze, you know, a little bit apart from the calf. And she was grazing, and then a tiger came, and the tiger basically captured her and said, or did something, you know, wouldn't let her move. He said, I'm going to eat you. And she said to the tiger, I have this calf to feed. Can you just let me go to my calf and feed the calf, and I promise you I will come back immediately. And so the tiger, being this is Vrindavan, you know, tigers are a little religious there. So the tiger, feeling great empathy for this cow, the tiger gave her permission to go to her calf. She went to her calf, fed the calf, came back, and guess what happened? The tiger, there's several versions of the story. It's from the Padma Purana. The tiger basically, one story is he turned into Krishna. Another story, he was Yamaraj. Anyway, there's different versions of the story, depending on which version of the Padma Purana you read. And, or another version is that Krishna appeared there and preached to the tiger, saved him from the tiger, and transformed the tiger into a spiritual body, you know, whatever. But in any case, she was saved, and she was given great respect because of her truthfulness. And because she was truthful, she was allowed later on to become one of Krishna's wives and consorts. Fact story. Very, very famous story. So the forest in which Radha Kund is situated is called Bahula Van, means the forest of Bahula. So according to the Sanatan Goswami, and he's Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's a very auspicious day to bathe in Radha Kund and Shyama Kund. Now the interesting thing is some of the translations of his original Sanskrit say that Radha Kund appeared on that day, but not his original Sanskrit. That's also maybe why there was a lot of confusion as to the actual day of Radha Kund's appearance. But it is clearly stated by Jiva Goswami and Gopal Champu, clearly stated by basically our acharyas, that Radha Kund appeared in the month of Chaitra. Now, also another thing is that Radha Kund did not appear at midnight. That's an interesting thing. Even if we take the actual day that Radha Kund appeared, it wasn't at midnight. Why do people pick midnight? Well, there's this tendency to think that late at night is a time of fun. That's my speculation. Krishna did appear at midnight. I mean, that's directly described. Krishna appeared at midnight. But somehow or other, it's the conception that, you know, night is the time for fun. Both in the Western world and in India, people have this conception. And actually, the time for fun is in the early morning, because that's the Brahma Muhurta time, about an hour and a half before sunrise till about 8 o'clock in the morning, is the time when one can most effectively meditate on the holy name of the Lord. But, you know, somehow or other, people have these conceptions. I mean, there's all so many conceptions that people have due to, I guess, just culture. They're not absolute conceptions. Just like one funny thing in ISKCON is that people think that famous kirtan leaders have to have a beard. That's actually, if you see any of these kirtan melas, I mean, famous ones, the most famous ones, of course, not everyone, they have to have a beard. And not the ladies, of course. So there's all these conceptions we have that connect spirituality with some material arrangement. And for example, people think it's very spiritual to be in the dark. And I've seen that, like people will chant japa in the morning and they basically turn all the lights out in the temple room or wherever they are. And at least I've seen in temples, they make it darker. But I find that, you know, the light keeps you awake. So that, you know, but spiritual life is not dependent upon material adjustments, although, you know, culturally there are these things. So basically, why is Radhakund consider Radhakund to have appeared today? Because it was basically a culture. You know, so many things happened. Like if you go to Vrindavan, you'll hear so many stories about different things. And many of those stories are not there in Shastra from the Goswamis or any other Shastra. So we take those with a little grain of salt, as they say. I mean, they could have occurred. Krishna can do anything. Obviously, Krishna can do anything. I mean, Krishna could have had Radhakund appear twice in a year if he wanted to. Or Krishna could have had Radhakund in a different universe appear at that time. But basically, let's go by the Acharyas. That's our method of knowing. And I think that's really important. Because if we speculate, then we may be completely wrong. I mean, it's all right to be wrong about material things, like, you know, what type of ice cream do you like? But it's not all right to be wrong about spiritual subject matters. Okay, so with that in mind, a little bit of information for you. With that in mind, we're going to go on to the Krishna book, and we are reading from the Krishna book about Rukmini and Krishna. Krishna has just kidnapped Rukmini, and they're leaving Kundina, and Krishna has just defeated Shishupal. Shishupal is really upset. Rukmi. So Shishupal didn't fight. Shishupal was supposed to get married to Rukmini, but Rukmi actually chased Krishna, and he got defeated. And Krishna gave him a little haircut. Cut off his hair in different places, and cut off the mustache in different places. And here Balaram is caught up to them. That's where we are in this particular story. So let's share the screen and continue with our reading of Krishna book. Let me find that screen. Hold on a second, I got a lot of screens open. Oh my god, I got so many screens open. Oh, there it is. Okay, here we go. Whoops. Oh, did I share the wrong screen? Wait a second. Let me try that again. All right. Okay, here we go. We're sharing the right screen by Krishna's grace. Let me just get it set up. And move everything around. So Balaram is actually practically chastising Krishna at this point, because he's saying, you know, it wasn't appropriate for you to treat Rukmi like that, you know, whatever he was. He's our brother-in-law now. So after this, to pacify Rukmini, Lord Balaram said to her, "You should not be sorry that your brother has been made odd-looking. You know, his hair had been cut in various places, mustache, half-cut. Everyone suffers or enjoys the results of his own actions." Lord Balaram wanted to impress upon Rukmini that she should not be sorry for the consequences her brother suffered due to his actions. There was no need of being too affectionate toward such a brother. Lord Balaram again turned toward Krishna and said, "My dear Krishna, a relative, even though he commits such a blunder and deserves to be killed, should be excused. For when such a relative is conscious of his own fault, that consciousness is itself like death. Therefore, there is no need to kill him." Balaram again turned toward Rukmini and informed her that the current duty of the Kshatriya in human society is so fixed that according to the principles of fighting, one's own brother may become an enemy. Then a Kshatriya does not hesitate to kill his own brother. In other words, Lord Balaram wanted to instruct Rukmini that Rukmini and Krishna were right in not showing mercy to each other in the fighting, despite the family consideration that they happen to be brothers-in-law. Sri Balaram informed Rukmini that Kshatriyas are typical emblems of the materialistic way of life. They become puffed up whenever there's a question of material acquisition. Therefore, when there is a fight between two belligerent Kshatriyas for kingdom, land, wealth, women, prestige, or power, they try to put one another into the most abominable condition. Balaram instructed Rukmini that her affection toward her brother Rukmi, who had created enmity with so many persons, was a perverse consideration befitting an ordinary materialist. Her brother's character was not at all admirable, considering his treatment of his friends, and yet Rukmini, like an ordinary woman, was affectionate toward him. He was not fit to be her brother, and still Rukmini was lenient toward him. Besides that, Balaram continued, the consideration that a person is neutral or is one's friend or enemy is generally made by persons in the bodily concept of life. Such foolish persons are bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. The spirit soul is of the same pure quality in any embodiment of matter, but those who are not sufficiently intelligent see only the bodily differences between animals and men, literates and illiterates, rich and poor, which cover the pure spirit soul. Such differences, observed merely on the basis of the body, are exactly like the differences between fires in terms of the various types of fuel they consume. Whatever the size and shape of the fuel, there is no such variety of size and shape in the fire which comes out. Similarly, in the sky, there are no differences in size or shape. So in this way, Balaram reconciled the situation by his moral and ethical instructions to Rukmini and Krishna. To Rukmini, he stated further, "This body is part of the material manifestation consisting of the material elements, living conditions, and interactions of the modes of material nature. The living entity or spirit soul, being in contact with these, is transmigrating from one body to another due to illusory enjoyment, and that transmigration is known as material existence. This contact of the living entity with the material manifestation has neither integration nor disintegration. My dear chaste sister-in-law, the spirit soul is, of course, the cause of this material body, just as the sun is the cause of sunlight, eyesight, and the forms of material manifestation. The example of the sunshine and the material manifestation is very appropriate in understanding the living entity's contact with the material world. In the morning, the sun rises, and the heat and light gradually expand throughout the whole day. The sun is the cause of all material shapes and forms, for it is due to the sun that integration and disintegration of material elements take place. But as soon as the sun sets, the whole manifestation is no longer connected to the sun, which is passed from one place to another. When the sun passes from the eastern to the western hemisphere, the results of the interactions due to the sunshine in the eastern hemisphere remain, but the sunshine itself is visible in the western hemisphere. So, similarly, the living entity accepts or produces different bodies and different bodily relationships in a particular circumstance, but as soon as he gives up the present body and accepts another, he has nothing to do with the former body. Similarly, the living entity has nothing to do with the next body he accepts. He is always free from the contact of this bodily contamination. Therefore, continued Balaram, the appearance and disappearance of the body have nothing to do with the living entity, just as the waxing and waning of the moon have nothing to do with the moon. When the moon waxes, we falsely think that the moon is developing, and when it wanes, we think the moon is decreasing. In other words, you go from the full moon to the half moon to the Amavas, which means no moon, or sometimes called new moon. But the moon is always the same. Factually, the moon as it is always the same and has nothing to do with such visible activities of waxing and waning. Lord Balaram continued, one's consciousness in material existence can be compared to sleeping and dreaming. When a man sleeps, he dreams of many non-factual happenings, and as a result of dreaming, he becomes subject to different kinds of distress and happiness. Similarly, when a person is in the dream of material consciousness, he suffers the effects of accepting a body and giving it up again in material existence. Opposite to this material consciousness is Krishna consciousness. In other words, when a man is elevated to the platform of Krishna consciousness, he becomes freed from this false conception of life. So Balaram is preaching some spiritual knowledge, and that's what it says here. In this way, Sri Balaram instructed Rukmini in spiritual knowledge. He further addressed his sister-in-law thus, sweet smiling Rukmini, do not be aggrieved by false notions caused by ignorance. Only because of false notions does one become unhappy, but one can immediately remove this unhappiness by discussing the philosophy of actual life. Be happy on that platform only. After hearing such enlightening instructions from Sri Balaram, Rukmini immediately became pacified and happy and adjusted her mind, which was very much afflicted by the degraded position of her brother Rukmini. Bodily attachment, but this is a pastime because she's the original goddess of fortune. As far as Rukmini was concerned, his promise was not fulfilled, nor was his mission successful. He had come from home with the soldiers and military phalanx to defeat Krishna and release his sister, but on the contrary, he lost all his soldiers and military strength. He was personally degraded and very sorry, but by the grace of the Lord, he could continue his life to its fixed destination. And we're going to read later on in the Krishna book what that fixed destination was. Actually, I'll give you a little hint. He was killed by Balaram. Oh my God. By Krishna. Because he was a Kshatriya, he could remember his promise that he would not return to his capital city, Kundina, without killing Krishna and releasing his sister, which he had failed to do. Therefore, he decided in anger not to return to his capital city, and he constructed a small cottage in the village known as Bhojakota, where he resided for the rest of his life, until he was killed. After defeating all the opposing elements and forcibly carrying away Rukmini, Krishna brought her to his capital city, Dwarka, and then married her according to the Vedic ritualistic principles. After this marriage, Krishna became the king of the Yadus at Dwarka. On the occasion of his marriage with Rukmini, all the inhabitants were happy, and in every house there were great ceremonies. The inhabitants of Dwarka city were so much pleased that they dressed themselves with the nicest possible ornaments and garments, and went to present gifts according to their means to the newly married couple, Krishna and Rukmini. All the houses of Yadupuri, that's Dwarka, were decorated with flags, festoons, and flowers. Each and every house had an extra gate specifically prepared for this occasion, and on both sides of the gate were big water jugs filled with water. The whole city was made fragrant by the burning of fine incense, and at night there was illumination from thousands of lamps, which decorated every building. The entire city appeared jubilant on the occasion of Lord Krishna's marriage with Rukmini. Everywhere in the city there were profuse decorations of banana trees and betel nut trees. These two free trees are considered very auspicious in happy ceremonies. At the same time, there was an assembly of many elephants who carried the respective kings of different friendly kingdoms. It is the habit of the elephant that whenever he sees some small plants and trees out of his sportive and frivolous nature, he uproots the trees and throws them hither and thither. The elephants assembled on this occasion also scattered the banana and betel nut trees, but in spite of such intoxicated action, the whole city, with the trees thrown here and there, looked very nice. The friendly kings of the Kurus and Pandavas were represented by Bhishma, Dhritarashtra, the five Pandavas brothers, King Drupada, King Santaradana, and Rukmini's father, Bhishmaka. Because of Krishna's kidnapping Rukmini, there were initially some misunderstanding between the two families. But Bhishmaka, king of Vidarbha, being approached by Sri Balaram and persuaded by many saintly persons, was induced to participate in the marriage ceremony of Krishna and Rukmini. Although the incident of the kidnapping was not a very happy occurrence in the kingdom of Vidarbha, kidnapping was not an unusual affair among Kshatriyas. Kidnapping was, in fact, current in almost all their marriages. Anyway, King Bhishmaka was from the very beginning inclined to hand over his beautiful daughter to Krishna. In one way or another, his purpose had been served. And so he was pleased to join the marriage ceremony, even though his eldest son was degraded in the fight. It is mentioned in the Padma Purana that Maharaj Nanda, the coward boys of Vrindavan, joined the marriage ceremony. Kings from the kingdoms of Kuru, Srinjaya, Kikaya, Vidarbha, and Kunti all came to Dwarka on this occasion and met with one another very joyfully. The story of Rukmini's being kidnapped by Krishna was poeticized, and professional readers recited it everywhere. All the assembled kings and their daughters especially were struck with wonder and very much pleased upon hearing the chivalrous activities of Krishna. In this way, all the visitors as well as the inhabitants of Dwarka city were joyful to see Krishna and Rukmini together. In other words, the goddess of fortune was now united with the Supreme Lord, the maintainer of everyone, and thus all the people felt extremely jubilant. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 54th chapter of Krishna. Krishna defeats all the princes and takes Rukmini home to Dwarka. So let's start chapter 55. So let's say there's 54b. Okay, chapter 55 is entitled Prajuna Born to Krishna and Rukmini. It is said that Cupid, who is directly part and parcel of Lord Vasudeva, and was formerly burned to ashes by the anger of Lord Shiva, took birth from the womb of Rukmini, begotten by Krishna. This is Kamadeva, a demigod of the heavenly planets, especially capable of inducing lusty desires. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna has many grades of parts and parcels, but the quadruple expansions of Krishna, Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, are directly in the Vishnu category. Kama, or the Cupid demigod who later took his birth from the womb of Rukmini, was also named Pradyumna, but he cannot be the Pradyumna of the Vishnu category. He belongs to the category of Jiva Tattva. But for exhibiting special power in the category of the demigods, he was part and parcel of the super prowess of Prajuna. Let me explain what that means. That means that Prajuna, who is Krishna's expansion, Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Prajuna, Aniruddha, empowered this Jiva Tattva soul who has the position of Cupid. Cupid has five arrows. Oh my God. You know, like form, touch, you know, the objects of the senses. And he fires these arrows, and he's known as Ananga. Ananga means, basically, someone without any limbs, or he's invisible. And that's because he got wiped out by Lord Shiva, who got very upset with him when He was trying to agitate Lord Shiva. So you don't know when he's coming, so be careful. You better watch out. So, it's not only, you know, the opposite sex, it's actually anything that you're attached to for sensory enjoyment. You know, some food, your tongue is wagging the dog, and you're the dog. So anyway, that is the verdict of the Goswamis. Therefore, when Cupid was burned to ashes by the anger of Lord Shiva, he merged into the body of Vasudeva, and to get his body again, he was begotten in the womb of Rukmini by Lord Krishna himself. Thus he was born as the son of Krishna and celebrated by the name Pradyumna. Because he was begotten by Lord Krishna directly, his qualities were most similar to those of Krishna. There was a demon of the name Shambhara, who was destined to be killed by Pradyumna. The Shambhara demon knew of his destiny, because there's astrology at that time, and as soon as he learned that Pradyumna had been born, he took the shape of a woman and kidnapped the baby from the maternity home less than 10 days after his birth. The demon took him and threw him directly into the sea. But as it is said, whoever is protected by Krishna, no one can kill. And whoever is destined to be killed by Krishna, no one can protect. When Pradyumna was thrown into the sea, a big fish immediately swallowed him. Later, this fish was caught in the net of a fisherman, and the fish was later sold to the Shambhara demon. Shambhara demon was not a vegetarian. In the kitchen of the demon was a maidservant whose name was Mayavati. This woman had formerly been the wife of Cupid, called Prati. When the fish was presented to the demon, Shambhara was taken charge of by his cook, who was to make it into a palatable fish preparation. Yuck. Demons and Rakshasas are accustomed to eat meat, fish, and similar non-vegetarian foods. Demons like Ravana, Kamsa, and Hiranyakashipu, although born of Brahmin and Kshatriya fathers, used to take meat and fish without discrimination. This practice is still prevalent in India, and those who eat meat and fish are generally called demons and rakshasas. Woo-hoo! Actually, some parts of India, even Bengal, and even in Orissa, what to speak of Kerala, you know, I have some disciples from Kerala, and they tell me that practically vegetarianism is non-existent. It's also a Christian state. Everybody eats fish, and even sometimes in Jagannath Puri, people who are connected to the temple mix the Mahaprasadam with fish. And sometimes in Bengal, they call fish water vegetables. It's just a vegetable. So anyway, the Prabhupada here says they're generally called demons and rakshasas. Just be careful. Don't use that name on them, or you may be their next dinner. So when the cook was cutting the fish, he found within his stomach a nice baby, which he immediately presented to the charge of Mayavati, who was an assistant in the kitchen affairs. This woman was surprised to see how such a nice baby could remain within the belly of a fish, and the situation perplexed her. Great sage Narada then appeared and explained to her about the birth of Pradyumna and how the baby had been taken away by Shambhara and later thrown into the sea. Mayavati knew that she had previously been Rati, the wife of Cupid. After her husband was burned to ashes by the wrath of Lord Shiva, she was always expecting him to come back in a material form. This woman was engaged for cooking nice rice and dal in the kitchen, but when she got this nice baby, and understood that he was Cupid, her own husband, she naturally took charge of him and with great affection began to bathe him regularly. Miraculously, the baby swiftly grew up, because he's not an ordinary baby, and within a short period he became a beautiful young man. His eyes were just like the petals of lotus flowers, and his arms were long, reaching down to his knees. Any woman who happened to see him was captivated by his bodily beauty. Mayavati could understand that her former husband, Cupid, born as Pradyumna, had grown into such a nice young man, and she also gradually became captivated and lusty. Smiling before him with a feminine attractiveness, she expressed her desire for sexual union. He therefore inquired from her, "How is it possible that first you were affectionate like a mother, and now you are expressing the symptoms of a lusty woman? What is the reason for such a change?" On hearing this statement from Prajuna, the woman Rati replied, "My dear sir, you were the son of Lord Krishna. Before you were 10 days old, you were stolen by the Shambhari demon and later thrown into the water and swallowed by a fish. In this way, you have come under my care. But actually, in your former life as Cupid, I was your wife. Therefore, my manifestation of conjugal symptoms is not at all incompatible. Shambhara wanted to kill you, and he's endowed with various mystic powers. Therefore, before he again attempts to kill you, please kill him as soon as possible with your divine power. Since you were stolen by Shambhara, your mother, Rukmini Devi, has been in a very grievous condition. Like a Kurari bird who's lost her babies. She's very affectionate toward you, and since you have been taken away from her, she has been living like a cow aggrieved over the loss of its calf." Mayavati had mystic knowledge of supernatural powers. Supernatural powers are generally known as Maya, and to surpass all such powers, there is another supernatural power called Mahamaya. Mayavati had the knowledge of the mystic power of Mahamaya, and she delivered to Prajuna the specific energetic power in order to defeat the mystic powers of the Shambhara demon. Thus, being empowered by his wife, Prajuna immediately went before Shambhara and challenged him to fight. Prajuna addressed him in a very strong language so that his temper would be agitated and he would be moved to fight. At Prajuna's words, the demon Shambhara, being insulted, felt just as a snake feels after being struck by someone's foot. A serpent cannot tolerate being kicked by another animal or by a man, and immediately it bites its opponent. Shambhara felt the words of Prajuna as if they were a kick. He immediately took his club in his hand and appeared before Prajuna to fight. Roaring like a thundering cloud, in great anger, the demon began to beat Prajuna with his club just as a thunderbolt beats a mountain. Prajuna protected himself with his own club and eventually struck the demon very severely. In this way, the fighting between Shambhara and Prajuna began in earnest. But Shambhara knew the art of mystic powers and could raise himself into the sky and fight from outer space. There's a demon of the name Maya, and Shambhara had learned many mystic powers from him. He thus raised himself high into the sky and threw various types of nuclear weapons at the body of Prajuna. To combat the mystic powers of Shambhara, Prajuna invoked another mystic power known as Mahavidya, which was different from the black mystic power. The Mahavidya mystic power is based on the quality of goodness. Shambhara, understanding that his enemy was formidable, took assistance from various kinds of demoniac mystic powers belonging to the Guyakas, the Gandharvas, the Visachas, the snakes, and the Rakshasas. But although the demon exhibited his mystic powers and took shelter of supernatural strength, Prajuna was able to counteract his strength and powers by the superior power of Mahavidya. When Shambhara was defeated in every respect, Prajuna took a sharp sword and immediately cut off the demon's head, which was decorated with a helmet and valuable jewels. When Prajuna thus killed the demon, all the demigods in the higher planetary system showered flowers on him. Prajuna's wife, Mayavati, could travel in outer space, and therefore they directly reached his father's capital, Dwarka, by the airwaves. They passed above a palace of Lord Krishna, came down as a cloud comes down with lightning. The inner section of a palace is known as the Antapura, private apartments. Prajuna and Mayavati could see many women there, and they sat down among them. When the women saw Prajuna dressed in yellowish garments with very long arms, curling hair, beautiful reddish eyes, a smiling face, jewelry and ornaments, they at first could not recognize him as a personality different from Krishna. They all felt very bashful at the sudden presence of Krishna and wanted to hide in a different corner of the palace. When the women saw, however, that not all the characteristics of Lord Krishna were present in the personality of Prajuna, out of curiosity, they came back to see him and his wife, Mayavati. All of them were conjecturing as to who he was, for he was so beautiful. Among the women was Rukmini Devi, who was equally beautiful with her lotus-like eyes. Seeing Prajuna, she naturally remembered her own son, and milk began to flow from her breasts out of motherly affection. She then began to wonder, who is this beautiful young boy? He appears to be the most beautiful person. Who is the fortunate young woman who is able to conceive this nice boy in her womb and become his mother? And who was that young woman who was accompanying him? How had they met? Remembering my own son was stolen from the maternity home, I can only guess that if he is living somewhere, he might have grown by this time to be like this boy. Simply by intuition, Rukmini could understand that Prajuna was her own lost son. She could also observe that Prajuna resembled Lord Krishna in every respect. She was struck with wonder as to how he had acquired all the characteristics of Lord Krishna. She therefore began to think more confidently that the boy must be her own grown-up son, because she felt so much affection for him, and as an auspicious sign, her left arm was trembling. At that very moment, Lord Krishna, along with his father and mother Devaki and Vasudeva, appeared on the scene. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could understand everything, yet in that situation he remained silent. However, by the desire of Lord Sri Krishna, the great sage Narada also appeared, and he disclosed all the incidents, how Prajuna had been stolen from the maternity home, and how he had grown up and come there with his wife, Mayavati, who had formerly been Rati, the wife of Cupid. When everyone was informed of the mysterious disappearance of Prajuna and how he had grown up, they were all struck with wonder, because they had gotten back their dead son after they were almost hopeless of his return. When they understood it was Prajuna who was present, they received him with great delight. One after another, all the members of the family, Devaki, Vasudeva, Lord Sri Krishna, Lord Balaram, Rukmini, and all the women of the family embraced Prajuna and his wife, Mayavati. When the news of Prajuna's return spread all over the city of Dwaraka, all the astonished citizens came with great eagerness to see the lost Prajuna. The dead son has come back, they said. What can be more pleasing than this? Let's see how much more we have. Oh, just one more paragraph, then we can finish. Srila Shukadeva Goswami has explained that in the beginning, all the ladies of the palace, who were all mothers and stepmothers of Prajuna, mistook him to be Krishna and were all bashful and affected by the desire for conjugal love. The explanation is that Prajuna's personal appearance was exactly like Krishna's, and it was factually Cupid himself. There was no cause for astonishment. Therefore, when the mothers of Prajuna and the other women mistook him in that way, it is clear from the statement that Prajuna's bodily characteristics were so similar to Krishna's that he was mistaken for Krishna, even by his mother. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 55th chapter of Krishna, Prajuna born to Krishna and Rukmini. So we finished chapter 55. We're going through a Krishna book rather quickly. Okay, let's stop sharing and allow you to hold on a second. Unmute yourselves and or type. Wait, hold on a second. Oh yeah, there we go. Or raise your hand and speak, or type in the chat window to ask a question. Who has a question? This is your opportunity. So you can raise your hand. Hold on, let me pull up the participants. You can raise your hand, or you can do it, any of the other two things. Type in the chat window, or unmute yourself if you are bold enough. Who has a question? Please, somebody raise your hand.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev, Pranam.
Hare Krishna, by Chaitanya. All glories to Prabhupada. So, yeah, what's up?
Hare Krishna.
I'll be fine.
Hare Krishna. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the beautiful, beautiful class, Gurudev. So much to take away from here. And I just wanted to ask about, you know, the whole episode of Rukmini being kidnapped and about Rukmi. And how Balaram provided all that instruction. Is Rukmi, do we have any understanding of Rukmi's past life or his original position or something like that, to be a brother of Rukmini and then to be killed by Balaram? Is there something good there?
I don't have that information. Maybe there is somewhere that information. Maybe someone else in there who's watching the class knows. But I don't have that information. I mean, definitely he wasn't just an ordinary person, because to be killed by Balaram, that's pretty cool. Then you get liberated, and also to be the brother of the goddess of fortune is pretty cool too. So anyway, so he's a special person, and he had demoniac characteristics, and ultimately he, because he criticized and tried to cheat Balaram, which we're going to read later on, I'm not going to give that away, he got killed by Balaram.
Thank you very much, Gurudev. Hare
All right, thank
Krishna.
you. Hari Bell. All right.
Hare Krishna, Guru.
You have a lot of static on your line.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you better now.
I've just got a quick question. Last night, I was just in discussion with some devotees who were talking about Bahula Utsava, and they said it's the first, it's the only day that that devotees can go inside Radhakund and go for a dip. And I know that it's we're not in that mood. We sprinkle the water on us, but we'd never take a dip inside. So, and they said, no, this is the only day that we can do it.
Well, that's not Shastric. There's so
I
many
told
things.
them I'll ask you.
There's so many people, most of the devotees, even on the ISKCON calendar, it says it's the appearance of Radhakund, but it's not. It's not the appearance of Radhakund. I mean, one should sprinkle water on the head. I mean, if they're qualified, let them go in, but I'm not going to put my feet in and go in Radhakund.
No, we wouldn't, yeah.
I mean, I would, just like I wouldn't put my feet on the deity, you know. I mean,
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for the clarification, Gurudev. Hari Bol.
okay, that's good.
Thank
So
you.
here's a question. I guess it mentioned in the Radharani book, not sure the book of Krishna married many gopis simultaneously during the marriage of Rukmini and Satyabhama. Also, gopas married too. Anyway, a lot of the, sorry, whatever stories you hear, I'm not going to talk about these stories specifically, but whatever stories you hear, you should find out if there's a Shastric reference. I mean, there's many stories devotees tell that have absolutely no Shastric reference. Not from the Goswamis, or not from any authorized source. Maybe they happened. My understanding is the Bahulavan was named after the cow, but it could have been the opposite. That's actually a good point. But, the cow's name was Bahula. That's what we know. So people say, that I don't have Shastric reference for. Whether one came first before the other, whatever. So anyway, so yeah, most of the devotees will tell you that Radhakund appeared on today, was commemoration of the day that Radhakund appeared. However, the Shastric reference says it's in the month of Chaitra. And there's a lot of Shastric references about that. A lot. Anyway, in the Haribhajavilas, it says it's very good to take a bath on this day in Bahulastami. It doesn't say anything about it being the appearance day of Radhakund. Some of the translations say it is, but those translations don't reflect the Sanskrit. They reflect people's opinion. And so you stories, opinions, we have to stick with Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Okay, sorry to disappoint everybody, but now you have another holiday to work or look forward to in the month of Chaitra. So, Mr. Gopal, you have a question?
You told the
Yes.
story about the cow Bahula. So if this is Bahulashtami, is it the appearance day of the cow, or is it the day that the tiger and the cow had their pastime, or what is the significance of this particular day to that pastime?
It's not mentioned. It's a special day for bathing in Radhakund. That is a fact. Not necessarily at midnight. The whole midnight thing came due to some village custom.
I see.
Midnight.
So,
because, and, you know, so, people party. Party. You party at midnight.
Well, Krishna seemed to party at midnight.
Yes, because that's when the gopis escaped from their homes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also partied during the day, too. He met the gopis at different places like Radhakund during the day. It's not only at midnight he partied. Krishna partied 24 hours a day.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Party in the early morning, party in the midday. The whole day was a party for Krishna. So that's the spiritual world, but this is the material world. The material world means that mode of goodness time is early in the morning. Okay? All Thank right, you. Any other questions? And it's time to end. So we did two chapters today, so thank you very much. You've all been very attentive. It's nice we cleared up some things in class today. And thank you, all glorious, there's divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Hari, 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 Bo, Go Run.